Okay, let's unpack this. Imagine a relationship, maybe one you've built over years.
Yeah.
Shared stuff, quiet comforts, and that bedrock of promises you don't even say out loud. Then bam, in an instant, there's this fracture, a really profound break that just shatters the whole foundation.
Right.
And it leaves behind, well, not just damage, but often this feeling of devastation, like it's completely unfixable.
Yeah, it feels final sometimes.
Exactly. So today we're diving headfirst into that really profound and, let's be honest, often excruciating aftermath. We're talking about the really hard but genuinely possible journey of rebuilding trust after betrayal in a relationship.
It's a huge topic.
It is. Trust is.
What?
It's universal, isn't it?
Yeah.
The invisible structure holding up all our meaningful connections.
Absolutely.
And when that structure just crumbles, the emotional fallout can be, well, catastrophic is maybe not too strong a word.
No, I think that fits for many people.
So for this deep dive, we're leaning heavily on this incredibly insightful roadmap from Psychology Today. It's an article by Dr. Kara Gardenswarts called How to Rebuild Trust After Betrayal in a Relationship.
A very direct title.
Very direct. And our mission isn't just to, summarize it. We want to pull out the most potent, actionable steps, the real DNA of repair, you could say, and the most maybe surprising research-backed insights to guide you, our listener, through what is frankly one of life's toughest, but maybe most transformative journeys back to connection.
And what's particularly striking about Dr. Gardenswarts' article, what makes it really valuable, I think, is that even though betrayal just brings up these images of, irreparable damage and awful pain,
Right.
it actually offers a surprisingly hopeful view, and it's evidence-based, which is key.
Hopeful but realistic.
Exactly. It doesn't gloss over how incredibly difficult it is, but it lays out really clearly that if, and this is the big if both partners are genuinely committed to the process,
Both. Has to be both.
yes, then rebuilding trust is absolutely possible. And this isn't just like feel-good theory or empty platitudes.
No theories. We need practical stuff.
Right. Dr. Gardenswarts gives practical step-by-step guidance. It's rooted in solid psychological understanding. She reviews recent research, outlines actual strategies couples can use.
Okay.
She talks about trust as the glue, the thing that creates safety, predictability, real
The
connection.
glue. I like that metaphor.
It's good, isn't it? So repairing it isn't just recovery, it's like a deliberate recreation. You might even form a stronger, more resilient bond afterwards.
Stronger, even. That's interesting.
But it sets a realistic bar. It acknowledges the pain, but definitely plants a flag for possibility.
That's such an important place to start acknowledging possibility, even when you're in so much pain. The article really does lay this out beautifully. It starts by defining trust as the bedrock of any meaningful relationship,
The bedrock.
the glue that binds two people together, creating that essential sense of safety and connection. You can almost feel the weight of those words, can't
You
you?
really can. It's fundamental.
It's that unspoken promise we count on,
Yeah.
that our partner will act with integrity, with consideration, that they have our back.
Yeah, that they'll be there
They'll be
physically, emotionally.
right. But then, like you said, it describes that utter devastation when trust is shattered. Infidelity is the obvious one, but also dishonesty, other breaches.
And those other breaches can be so varied, can't they?
Totally. Financial lies, breaking deep confidences, even just a pattern of emotional neglect that feels like abandonment.
Yeah, it really strikes, as the article says, at the core of a relationship.
Exactly. It hits your sense of self, your safety in the world, not just the relationship.
It's destabilizing.
Hugely. So for anyone who's been through this, that feeling of it being insurmountably broken, that's incredibly real, visceral. So the big question, the one hanging in the air, is just how? How do you even start thinking about rebuilding something that feels so fundamentally smashed, so unfixable? Where do you put that first stone back?
And you've really captured that initial, just overwhelming feeling, that sense of devastation. It's not just valid, it's like incredibly common, almost universal after a betrayal.
Yeah.
It's a natural human response to having something so basic violated. The article gets that, it approaches it with empathy.
Crit.
But critically, right away, it introduces the first condition, the absolute prerequisite before any repair can even start,
Okay, what is
the commitment to rebuild, and it must be mutual.
mutual? Okay. So one person can't drag the other along.
Absolutely not. It's not a solo job. You can't force it. It really needs both people to be, as the article puts it, fully dedicated to the process, making a conscious choice to invest in the relationship's future.
And that investment sounds significant.
Oh, it is. The source is crystal clear on this. It demands time, patience, and unwavering effort.
Time, patience, unwavering effort.
Wow. Think about what mutual commitment really means here. It's not just saying, okay, let's try. It's a deep shift in intention.
Okay.
For the person who was betrayed, it means finding the courage to even think about a future with the person who hurt them so badly, to risk hoping again.
That takes incredible bravery.
It does. And for the betrayer, it means facing what they did head on, no defensiveness, and dedicating themselves to the long, often really uncomfortable work of earning back trust.
Earning it back, not just expecting it.
Precisely. The article sets this realistic, but ultimately, I think, empowering expectation for you, the listener. It says, it's not a journey for the faint-hearted, but for those willing to invest in the possibility of a renewed relationship.
Not for the faint-hearted. That says a lot.
It really does. This mutual commitment, it's the indispensable foundation. Everything else is built on that. It signals this shared belief that even with all the pain, the relationship is worth fighting for, worth transforming.
Worth fighting for.
Without that shared deep dedication, the path ahead isn't just harder, it's probably impossible. It's that first decision to lean in together, even
right.
when you want to pull away.
Yeah.
Like declaring war on the betrayal together for the relationship.
That initial profound decision, that's the gateway. Okay, so once that commitment is there, hopefully from both sides, the roadmap starts. And Dr. Gardenswartz immediately points to a step that sounds incredibly hard, especially for the betrayer. Responsibility, owning your actions. This isn't just feeling bad, is it? It's an active process.
Very active.
The article says the betrayer must acknowledge their actions and the pain they've caused. Clear, unambiguous admission. No excuses, no buts, no rationalizing.
Right. Not, I'm sorry if you were hurt.
Exactly. It's, I did this, and I see that my actions caused you this specific pain. And the article makes this crucial distinction. This isn't about self-flagellation, but about genuine remorse and empathy.
That's such an important difference.
Isn't it? Because self-pity just turns the focus back on the betrayer. Genuine remorse is about the other person's pain, truly getting the impact on your partner. Feeling sorrow for their suffering, not just your own consequences.
It's about accepting your role fully.
Yes. And to back this up, the article brings in Dr. John Gottman's work. His research underscores the importance of attunement and empathy from the betrayer.
Attunement, that's a key Gottman concept.
It is. Being really aware of and responsive to your partner's emotional state. So imagine your partner is furious or terrified or just incredibly sad.
Okay.
Attunement isn't defending yourself or minimizing it or trying to fix it right away. It's validating it, saying something like, I see how incredibly angry you are and I get why. I'm here to listen, all of it. No judgment.
Creating that emotional container for their pain.
Exactly. Not trying to shut it down. Showing you're with them in it, not separate. And this step, owning the hurt, showing that attunement that lays the essential groundwork, it builds the foundation for open, honest communication, fostering that sense of security needed for healing.
It's the first, hardest, but most vital brick. Shows you grasp the gravity and you're willing to face it, prioritizing their pain.
Right.
And when we connect this to the bigger picture, it's just so clear why responsibility and attunement are vital. It's the first real sign the betrayer is ready to move past the betrayal itself and actually do the hard work of repair.
It shifts the dynamic.
Completely. From perpetrator victim to two people trying to navigate a crisis they're both stuck in, even if one caused it, they're both committed to fixing it.
Mm.
That acknowledgement creates that first, maybe fragile space for the betrayed partner to even think about moving forward, to slowly consider trusting again.
Okay, so that's the internal shift, the taking responsibility. What comes next?
Well, building right on that, the article highlights reliability, consistent actions over words. This is where the work gets tangible, where apologies turn into actual evidence of change.
Actions speak louder than words, the old cliche.
It's a cliche because it's true. But the article really digs into how hard consistent action is, especially when emotions are raw and the betrayed partner is basically watching your every move.
Hypervigilant.
Exactly. And it's not about big flashy gestures. Those can feel fake.
Right. Performative.
The insight here is about the mundane, consistent reliability, the small daily proofs.
Like what?
Like always being on time if you said you would, responding to a text when you said you could, following through on a small task, offering information transparently without being pushed.
Little things, but they add up.
They really do. The article specifies keeping promises, respecting boundaries, and showing dependability in every aspect of the relationship. You're building a new track record, brick by painful brick.
To outweigh the betrayal.
Slowly, yes. And it's not just wishful thinking. The source mentions recent studies confirm that consistent actions are far more effective in regaining trust than mere words.
So there's science behind it.
There is. The betrayed partner's brain needs new data, new experiences to counter the memory of the hurt. Every kept promise, every respected boundary, every proactive bit of honesty, it's like a small deposit in the trust bank.
A deposit. I like that.
It's this cumulative effect that provides the proof they need to slowly, cautiously start feeling safe again. It's the steady drumbeat of trustworthiness that starts to quiet the echoes of betrayal, proving real commitment, not just talk.
That makes so much sense. The shift from the one-time act of taking responsibility to the ongoing, maybe even boring, demonstration of trustworthiness.
Boring can be good here. Predictable, reliable.
Right. Creating new reality. Which leads us to acknowledging just how hard this whole journey is, especially for the betrayed partner. The article talks about understanding, embracing emotional complexity.
Yeah, it's definitely not a straight line.
No. The article says the betrayed partner experiences a whirlwind of emotions. Anger, sadness, fear, confusion, doubt, resentment. All mixed up, unpredictable.
Like emotional whiplash.
Totally. It can feel consuming, like you're losing your mind. So given that, the article stresses it's essential for the betrayer to remain patient and understanding.
Patience is key. Active patience.
Active patience. What does that mean?
It means not just giving space, but validating the feelings. Letting your partner express all that stuff, the anger, the fear, without getting defensive, without rushing them, without making it about your discomfort.
Sitting with their pain, even if it's directed at you.
Exactly. And offering presence and empathy anyway. The article has this crucial insight for both partners. Recognize that healing takes time, and setbacks are part of the journey.
Setbacks are part of it. Okay, that's important to normalize.
Yes. Because there will be good days and bad days. Moments of hope, and then moments where a trigger sends you right back to square one.
So what do you do then when a setback happens? How do you stop it from derailing everything?
Well, the article implies the betrayer's consistent patience, their empathy, even through those regressions, can significantly aid in rebuilding the emotional bridge. It shows you're willing to walk through the fire with them.
Not trying to drag them out of it or tell them to get over it.
Never tell them to get over it. It shows a commitment to enduring the storm together.
Right.
And the article doesn't just mention setbacks. It kind of frames them as expected, almost inevitable tests of that commitment to rebuild.
Okay, so expect them. Don't panic.
Exactly. The key isn't avoiding them. It's navigating them. When one happens, the implicit advice is don't despair. Go back to the core principles. Reown responsibility if needed. Reaffirm commitment. And crucially, re-engage in transparent communication.
Use the setback as an opportunity.
Yes. An opportunity for the betrayer to show renewed attunement. To say, okay, I see you're hurting again. I'm here. What do you need right now?
Which brings us right back to navigating those complex emotions. How do you do it? As a couple, individually.
The article is really emphatic here. It says communication, the power of transparency, is the absolute linchpin.
Oh, linchpin. Wow.
Not just an element, but the central connection point for the whole recovery. For it to work, both partners have to be willing to discuss the betrayal openly, express their feelings, and outline their gift for moving forward.
Openly. No sugarcoating.
No sugarcoating. It means creating space for raw, honest exchange, where feelings are validated, needs are stated clearly, without blame or immediate defensiveness.
That sounds hard. There are so many barriers. Fear of more pain, shame.
Huge barriers. For the betrayed, maybe fear of reopening wounds, shame about still being angry, fear of what else they might find out.
Yeah.
For the betrayer, shame, guilt, fear of being condemned again. Just the sheer discomfort of facing their partner's ongoing pain.
So transparency means actively pushing through those barriers.
Yes. It might mean the betrayer takes the initiative to share relevant details appropriately, not gratuitously, even when it's hard. Or the betrayed partner finding the courage to articulate their deepest fears.
And there's research backing this, too.
Mm-hmm. The article notes, research highlights the critical role of clear communication styles in any relationship. And clear communication here means things like active listening, really hearing and reflecting back.
Not just waiting to talk.
Right. Using I statements, I feel scared when, instead of you make me scared. Asking clarifying questions. no assumptions.
Seeking to understand.
Exactly. This transparent dialogue helps rebuild emotional intimacy. It's in these vulnerable talks that partners reconnect. They begin to understand the depth of the wound and the path to repair.
So it's not just talking about the betrayal, but talking through it.
Precisely. Revealing fears, hopes, renewed commitments, creating a shared story of healing. That's the difference between just talking at each other or around the issue and truly vulnerable communication. It takes immense courage, but fosters profound understanding.
That distinction is powerful. Yeah. Just talking versus creating safety for raw vulnerability. How do you open up when trust is shattered? It makes sense that this is the linchpin.
It really is.
But sometimes, you know, these challenges, they're just too big for a couple alone, no matter how committed.
That's absolutely true.
Which is where the article brings in guidance, seeking professional help. It acknowledges the complexity and the value of a neutral third party.
A safe space.
Yes. Therapists offer a neutral ground where both partners can express themselves freely. Think about that, a sanctuary. No fear of immediate backlash or judgment from friends or family.
That neutrality is key. An objective perspective.
Right. They can spot patterns the couple is too close to see, help process emotions safely, allow difficult truths to be spoken for healing, not hurting.
A container for the tough stuff.
Exactly. And the article mentions another key expert, especially on infidelity, Dr. Shirley Glass, in her seminal work, Not Just Friends.
Ah, yes. Her work is foundational.
It really is. It demystifies affairs, why they happen, and crucially, how couples can recover. Her approach often stresses things like full disclosure from the betrayer.
Within therapeutic boundaries, of course.
Right. And establishing strict boundaries, often a total cutoff from the affair partner. And fostering transparency in daily life to rebuild that feeling of security.
Practical steps for chaotic situations.
Yes. It's often seen as essential when infidelity is involved. Therapists guide couples in developing effective communication strategies and understanding each other's emotional needs. They decode patterns, teach listening skills, emotional regulation.
Like an expert guide through a dense forest.
That's a great analogy, helping you find paths you couldn't see on your own.
And what's really fascinating here, kind of shifting the focus slightly, is that this deep dive isn't just about the relationship itself. It deeply relies on the individuals in it.
How so?
The article introduces personal growth, embracing individual development. The insight is, rebuilding trust isn't just about the relationship, it's also about individual growth. Both partners need to look inward.
Not just at what happened between them, but within them.
Exactly. What within them might have contributed or affects the healing now. The expectation is both partners should commit to personal development, addressing personal issues that may have contributed to the betrayal.
Okay, what might that look like?
For the betrayer, maybe digging into their attachment style, insecurities, past trauma, unhealthy coping patterns, maybe a fear of intimacy that led them elsewhere. Understanding the why, not as an excuse, but to prevent it happening again.
And for the betrayed partner?
Maybe rebuilding self-esteem, processing the trauma of the betrayal itself, setting stronger boundaries, learning to regulate those intense emotions without relying solely on the partner, moving beyond being defined by what happened.
Becoming more self-aware, more intentional about self-improvement.
Yes, and again, there's backing for this. Studies on relationship resilience show that couples who support each other's personal growth are more likely to rebuild a stronger, more appreciative connection.
So individual growth fuels relationship resilience.
Absolutely. When each person grows, heals, becomes more self-aware, they bring a more complete, grounded, emotionally regulated self to the partnership.
A stronger you for a stronger us.
Beautifully put. Individual transformation is often the unsung hero in relationship repair. It provides the inner resources for the hard work.
That makes a lot of sense. Healing has to happen inside each person, too. Okay, so as we move through responsibility, reliability, communication, personal growth, there's one really sensitive area left. Intimacy.
Ah, yes. Often the last piece and sometimes the hardest.
After betrayal, intimacy can feel, well, terrifying, impossible even, violation, aversion, fear of vulnerability.
All of that.
But the article tackles it. Rebuilding intimacy, patience and respect. It's vital because intimacy is vital for a thriving relationship. Not just physical, but emotional, intellectual closeness.
The lifeblood.
But the approach has to be so delicate. Post-betrayal, rebuilding intimacy requires patience and respect for each other's boundaries. No forcing, no rushing, no demanding.
It needs profound understanding of the impact of the wounds.
Right. The betrayed partner might need loads of time, constant reassurance just to feel safe enough for touch, let alone deeper connection. The betrayer might struggle with shame or rejection, too.
It's complex for both.
So you have to approach this process with sensitivity, gradually fostering a new sense of togetherness at a pace comfortable for both partners. Gradually.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe starting non-sexual, holding hands, hugs.
Could be shared activities without pressure. Deep talks about desires, fears, boundaries, constant check-ins, understanding reluctance.
Rebuilding emotional closeness first, maybe.
Often, yes. Because intimacy isn't just physical. It's that deep emotional connection, feeling seen, understood, cherished, which all the previous steps have been working towards.
Responsibility, reliability, communication.
Understanding, personal growth.
Mm-hmm.
They all lay the groundwork. Intimacy emerges when safety, trust, and emotional security start to take root again. Relearning how to feel safe enough to be truly vulnerable together. And if we connect this back to the bigger picture, that gradual rebuilding of intimacy really mirrors the whole trust journey. It's all about reestablishing safety.
Primal safety.
Exactly. For the betrayed, intimacy can trigger those primal fears. Am I safe? Will I be heard again? Can I give myself fully again? So, pace comfortable for both means truly acknowledging those deep fears and the ongoing need for reassurance.
Consistent reassurance.
Yes. Not just once. It's a demonstration of respect, care, renewed integrity. And it's not some separate task on a checklist.
It unfolds naturally.
It should, yes. It blossoms organically from applying all those other steps consistently. Responsibility, reliability, build dependability, communication, understanding, heal emotional wounds, personal growth brings more secure individuals to the table.
They all pave the way.
They do. It shows true connection can't be rushed or manufactured. It grows patiently when trust is painstakingly restored. And often, the intimacy that emerges is more conscious, intentional, maybe even deeper.
Deeper because it was forged in the fire.
Mm-hmm. Precisely. Forged in that crucible of challenge and dedicated repair. A testament to the healing capacity when commitment is there.
Wow. We have covered a huge amount today. This really is a multifaceted, challenging path.
It truly is.
We started with that non-negotiable mutual commitment, then the pillars. Betrayer's responsibility, consistent reliability, the complex emotions needing understanding, the linchpin of transparent communication, recognizing when professional guidance is needed, the power of personal growth for both.
And finally, that delicate path to rebuilding intimacy.
Right. The article's conclusion sums it up. Rebuilding trust after betrayal is undeniably challenging, but it's possible with commitment and effort from both partners.
Possible, but requires real work.
A marathon, not a sprint. A crucible, definitely. But the finish line, a renewed, maybe stronger relationship is reachable.
Absolutely.
And for those wanting to dive even deeper, Dr. Gardenswartz points to other key resources. We mentioned Dr. John Gottman, The 7 Principles for Making Marriage Work.
Great for broader relationship health, too.
And Dr. Shirley Glass's Not Just Friends, which is so crucial for infidelity.
Essential reading in those cases. They offer comprehensive expert tools for these complex waters.
Definitely.
And you know what's fascinating here, building on those resources, is Dr. Sue Johnson's emotionally focused therapy, EFT.
Ah, EFT. Tell us more about that connection.
The article highlights its importance, focusing on addressing attachment needs and fostering secure emotional bonds, which are crucial for healing after betrayal.
Attachment needs. Why are they so central here?
Think about it. Betrayal hits our fundamental primal need for safety and belonging in our closest relationships. Our attachment system is about seeking that safe haven, that secure base.
And betrayal shatters that sense of safety.
Completely. Rips open those attachment wounds. Makes us feel profoundly unsafe, exposed, disconnected, triggers deep fears of abandonment, maybe worthlessness.
So EFT works directly on those wounds.
Exactly. It helps couples understand and repair those deep emotional injuries. It identifies the negative cycles that keep them stuck, the pursue-withdraw pattern, maybe. And it helps them articulate their deepest fears and longings safely, like the betrayed partner voicing that raw fear. Am I truly safe with you? Do I matter? Can I depend on you again?
And the betrayer learns to respond differently.
Yes. Not defensively, but with real empathy. Demonstrating commitment to being that secure base again. Showing they get the emotional impact, validating the pain, expressing commitment. It creates corrective emotional experiences.
Rewriting the script.
Rewriting the script, forging new, more secure bonds. Healing the root of the insecurity caused by the betrayal. So circling back to the article's main message, The path isn't easy, but for those willing to walk it, the rewards can be profound.
Not just getting back to where you were,
but potentially building something stronger, deeper, more resilient than you ever imagined.
So what does this all mean for you, our listener? Well, this deep dive, drawing on experts like Dr. Gardenswarts, gives a really powerful, actionable roadmap for navigating one of life's toughest emotional terrains.
It's a map, not magic, but a good map.
Exactly. These aren't just ideas. They're tangible, research-backed steps couples can take, brick by painstaking brick, rebuilding what felt broken. It's a huge challenge, this journey, but potentially so transformative.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd encourage you to think about the points we covered. Which steps really resonated,
mm-hmm.
felt like a missing piece, maybe?
Mm.
Or which seemed the most daunting, the hardest to put into practice?
Those answers can illuminate the path forward.
They really can.
And this brings up, I think, an important final question. Something the article hints at, inviting deeper thought for anyone on this path.
Okay.
Consider this. The article suggests true healing doesn't just get you back to baseline. Mm. It can lead to a stronger, more resilient relationship built on that newly forged trust.
Stronger, more resilient.
So what might it truly mean for you, not just to rebuild, but to fundamentally transform your relationship into something even more robust, with maybe a deeper appreciation for vulnerability, for resilience, for the profound commitment you share? What could that deeper, more conscious connection look like?
Something powerful to consider.
Indeed. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive.